week and will able to get you to push through the rest of the worst time of year. But soon it will be nice again, and hopefully we get some beautiful snow. That could be really amazing. Thank you again for listening. This is CJLO 1690.
Corner of Old Orchard Ave and Sherbrooke West, which has been decommissioned since 1992, is now up for sale for mixed-use development. The director of Montreal's Real Estate Strategy Department, Annie Gerbeau, stated, quote, "The Empress Theatre has undergone a financial analysis that will allow us to proceed with the sale shortly. There's no word yet on who the building might go to, but it will be residential with at least 20% for non-market housing on site." This marks the end to a long history of neighborhood efforts to preserve the building and get it running as a theater again.
If they can preserve the facade at the very least, I think that that will be a win for the community, because what we've had there now since 1992 is a rotten tooth in the middle of a great street, you know, like across from the park, in what should be like the heart of the business district of NDG. And I think that you have a rotting building sitting there in the middle of all that, and it just brings down the whole face of the community.
That was Paul Scriver. Scriver was the board president of the Empress Cultural Center around 10 years ago, a group dedicated to getting the theater renovated and functioning again. The Cultural Center was one of multiple groups over the years to try to pull funds together and purchase the building, to no avail. The theater was built in 1927. It was the only theater in Canada built in the Egyptian Revival style, a fad of the 20s popular after the discovery of Tutankhamun's tomb. The theater has scarabs and sarcophagi detailing around the bold stone pillars, iconography now more reminiscent of flappers and feather headbands than pharaohs on thrones. The building has had many transformations. Originally hosting vaudeville and burlesque shows, it was turned into a cabaret through the mid-60s. Then, in 1968, it became a cinema. Scott McLeod is an artist in NDG. He has fond memories of attending the theater through the 1980s to see cult classics.
And, you know, we saw Stop Making Sense, and we saw Blue Velvet, Rocky Horror Picture Show. So there was a strong nostalgia to that era, because there really wasn't much then. This is pre-internet and everything. So we going a night out to see at a repertory cinema or to see a new release was, you know, an exciting date. It was a great thing to go out and do, and you know, munching back the popcorn and enjoying the sight. And we had that at our front door, which was kind of great. We didn't have to go all the way downtown. So that's something that I reflect on positively.
But in 1992, a fire destroyed the cinema and the building was decommissioned and boarded up. McLeod recently made an animated film about the Empress called Empress Blue. And he also has a song with the same title.
Not enough. Will the Empress rise again? Bring back a lady of Grace's friends. Pack so tight on an opening.
McLeod, Scriver, and others in the community hope that whatever happens to the building, some of this history is preserved. Heritage Montreal has also spoken out, saying that the building should preserve elements of the facade and possibly even elements of the interior. The future of the Empress Hotel is now in the hands of developers. For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
She defends me a drunkard's dream. If if I ever did see one.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CGLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. Hope everyone is doing well. It's a Monday, the first ever December show, not first ever, first December show of the year for the Tommy John Show, and I cannot wait. We got a jam-packed hour. We had a hectic week in the National Football League. And man, what a weekend in college football. A huge upsets and rivalry week. Our conference championship games are set, and some teams have already punched their ticket to the 12-team playoff. All this to get into over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show. We had big games in the NHL, and man, a lot of firings. We will get into that. So why don't we start off with a quick recap of the past week, and we'll start off with the National Football League. It was Thanksgiving down in the States this weekend, so we had three games on Thursday. Started off with the red-hot Detroit Lions hosting the Chicago Bears, 23-20. They hold on to win. They were running away with this game, Detroit was, in the first half. We're about to go up three scores, then Gibbs fumbles at the five-yard line. And that gave the Bears hope. They played great in the second half, especially Caleb Williams. But we're all going to talk about that infamous play. That play where they had 30 seconds left. They get Caleb Williams gets sacked. They still have a timeout 5 yards away from field goal range. They don't use it. And the clock runs out. And as a result, Matt Eberflus is finally gone. He is fired. Goodbye. See you later. Just an absolute mess. That was an absolute mess. He deserved to be fired. He should have been fired last offseason, but here we are. They've lost their last, what, six games? And they've lost them in the most bare way possible. Whether it's a Hail Mary from Jaden Daniels, whether it's not scoring a touchdown against the awful Patriots, whether it's getting your kick blocked to beat the Packers, somehow forcing overtime against the Vikings. Somehow. Down double digits with like 2 minutes left. Force overtime. You get the ball first and you can't punch it in. The Vikings go down and win the game. And then to knock off the best team in the NFL, you have a clock management woe like that. It's tough being a Bears fan. But Matt Eberflus is gone. And he clearly lost that locker room. It's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. They're going to take their time. Thomas Bryant named the interim head coach. We'll see what happens there. He was doing great with Caleb Williams since... I mean, how many coaches have the Bears fired? It's crazy. They had the offensive coordinator 2 years ago, Luke Getsy. He gets fired. Not to mention... they hired Shane Waldron this year and then fired him like, what, a month and a half into the year? Now Eberflus is gone. It's an absolute disaster. Absolute disaster. But now they have Thomas Brown. I said he should do good things. I like what he's done. He's had a good track record. He was at Georgia, was at Wisconsin. He's quickly gone up the ranks. Within the Bears organization. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens next few weeks. But they have their quarterback. They got good defensive players. But, man, did that season go south. They were 4-2, and since that Hail Mary, absolute disaster. Would not want to be a Bears fan at the minute. But, hey, they move on. The Lions just continue to win football games. It wasn't pretty. Divisional game. They are 11-1 atop of the NFC North. The Cowboys 27-20 over the New York Giants. They have won two in a row and now are 5-7. And not out of it. It's not looking good, but you keep winning ball games, you start making a playoff push, which they have. Maybe one of the most impressive victories of the weekend, the Green Bay Packers 30-17 over the Miami Dolphins. A big game from Jordan Love. And a big game from Tucker Kraft. 78 yards, 6 catches. He was huge on some big third down plays. They got Josh Jacobs involved in the pass game as well. And you like to think this time of year is meant for Josh Jacobs. He just loves to be physical. Whether it's the pass game, in the run game, you name it, after contact, he's a beast. He's a really, really good player, and he's going to be awesome for them come playoff time. I have no doubt about that. Man, Friday, Kansas City, 19-17 in the craziest way possible, a fumbled snap at the end. Not even a fumbled snap, just a snap when no one was paying attention. Fumble. The Chiefs somehow continue to win these football games. 19-17, they take down the Raiders. The Houston Texans, 23-20. Trevor Lawrence concussed. Man, that was a brutal hit by Al Shaeer. Yeesh, probably going to get a suspension. But that was just a bad, bad hit. And we'll see what happens. Hopefully Trevor Lawrence is okay, but his season's probably done. They're what, a 2-3-1 football team. There's no need to bring Trevor Lawrence back. Let him recover for next year. But that was a brutal hit, a cheap shot. Was already giving himself up. Yeah, not a good look for the Texans. But they improve to 8-5 now and have a stranglehold on the AFC South. We speaking of the AFC South, the Colts on a final drive, 19-play final drive, get it done, 25-24 over the New England Patriots. The Chargers and Jim Harbaugh, 8-4. They win 17-13 without scoring an offensive touchdown. There's a pick six. They forced the Falcons to turn the ball over four times. Four Kirk Cousins interceptions. That was the ball game. Cousins has not played well at all. At all the last few weeks. They're on a three-game losing streak. They were 1-6-3 with a stranglehold over the division. Three losses in a row. They are tied with Tampa Bay now. They have the head-to-head. They beat them twice, so they currently right now would go to the playoffs, but they need to play better with Minnesota next week. That is a monumental game for the Falcons. Seattle, 26-21 over the New York Jets. They are 8-5 and continue to move along the top of the NFC West. The Commanders annihilated the Titans 42-19. The Pittsburgh Steelers behind a huge game from Russell Wilson. A little throwback to 2017-2016 Russell Wilson. 44-38. 414 yards, three touchdowns. It started off rocky, threw a pick six on their opening drive. Bounced back and was awesome after that. Not to mention that Steelers defense. People are going to look up and say, oh my God, they gave up 38. They forced the two fumbles, one for a fumble, one for a touchdown. Also forced another interception. Three turnovers against a highly powerful Bengals offense. So they both sides of the ball are working for the Steelers. 9-3, they sit atop of the AFC North. The Minnesota Vikings, 23-20 on a game-winning drive once again by Sam Darnold. They improved to 10-2. If you were to tell Vikings fans a few months ago that, hey, no J.J. McCarthy, you're going to have Sam Darnold, you're going to start the year 10-2, they probably wouldn't have believed you. But man, what a job Kevin O'Connell's done. Brian Flores on the defensive side of the ball. The Vikings are really, really putting it all together right now. They're used to these close games. Kansas City is, so is Minnesota. Every week it seems like it comes down to the wire and they pull something out. Sam Darnold keeps playing well. Good to see it. The Rams, 21-14 over the New Orleans Saints. Big afternoon for Kyron Williams, over 100 yards on the ground and a touchdown and only 15 carries. They improved to 6-6 and are still within striking distance in the NFC West. That win they had at Seattle a few weeks ago might be huge down the stretch. Tampa Bay, 26-23 in overtime. The Panthers were a shoe-in to win this game. They got the ball back, just needed a field goal in overtime. We're deep in Tampa Bay territory. Chuba Hubbard fumbles the ball. Tampa Bay recovers, and Baker gets them back in field goal range. 26-23, but a positive sign for Carolina fans. Bryce Young has played awesome the last few weeks. Dave Canales, what a job he's done with Bryce Young. They've only won three games, but his main job this year was to get Bryce Young playing good football, Heisman-winning football, and he's done that. He looks like the Heisman Trophy winner he was a few years ago at Alabama. But Tampa Bay, 6-6. Everyone thought their season was done after that overtime loss to Kansas City. They've really responded since then. Mike Evans being back has been huge for them. The Eagles, 24-19 over the Baltimore Ravens. A big afternoon once again for Saquon Barkley. 107 yards on the ground on 23 carries. He broke another late touchdown. He's been awesome. MVP chance raining down from the crowd in Baltimore. All those Eagles fans, man, did they show up. But what a performance for the Eagles. Their defense has been unbelievable. They started off slow. They got down 9-0 because of the Tucker missed extra point. We'll get into Justin Tucker and that later on in the show. But after that, they locked up an elite offense. Zay Flowers was non-existent. They were getting to Derrick Henry. They pitched pretty much a shutout after that. They had a garbage time touchdown at the end, but they were awesome. Awesome. And those two young corners, Mitchell and Dejean, my God. They had the worst secondary in the league last year. And just adding those two rookies has really, really worked wonders for them. So the Eagles now 10-2 atop of the NFC East. The Buffalo Bills, they made a statement on Sunday Night Football. In snowy conditions, it didn't matter. They hammered the 49ers 35-10. Josh Allen had a throwing touchdown, a receiving touchdown, and a rushing touchdown. All in the same game. That might be the first time ever. He had a big night. James Cook, man, was he awesome. Both running backs, Davis and Cook, were both great. He had 14 carries, 107 yards, and a touchdown. Davis had 11 carries for 63 yards and a touchdown. And that defense, they bend, but they don't break. It's crazy. San Francisco gets down inside the red zone. They force a turnover. The amount later in the game, once San Francisco's trying to get back into it, they force Brock Purdy into a fumble. That defense, man, Sean McDermott has them playing. And getting Milano back, that should be huge. The last game of the week, Cleveland and Denver tonight on Monday Night Football. The Broncos are 7-5. If they get to 8-5, they're pretty much securing a playoff spot, if you ask me. There are some teams still with an outside chance. The Colts are at 6-7. Miami at 5-7. I don't want to hear Cincinnati anymore. That was it. That defense is so awful. So awful. It's tough to watch. They are that bad. You hear, oh, this is a bad defense. It's worse than that. It is an appalling defense over in Cincinnati. Terrible. We'll quickly head over to the college football and maybe the surprise of the year. Michigan goes into the horseshoe in Columbus, Ohio, with no passing game. The worst Michigan team in 20 years, maybe. And they beat the number 2 ranked arch rival, Ohio State, 13-10. 13-10. The Wolverines had 62 passing yards and 2 touchdowns, and it did not matter. Their defense played lights out. The Mullins, the running back, played awesome. We are going to get into Ryan Day in Ohio State. That's going to be one of our main points today on the show. But what a win for Michigan to end the year on a high note. They're getting a number 1 quarterback in the country out of high school next year. Seems to be turning the page on this season. But what a way to end it. And Sherrone Moore, just to get confidence in the next year. Unbelievable result. And they were 23.5-point underdogs. 23.5-point underdogs. And man, did they give everything they had. That was the best they've looked all year defensively. All year. And they were sort of trending in the right direction. They hammered Northwestern, played Indiana tough. That was a statement, an absolute statement by the Wolverines heading into next year, that they, no matter how bad they are, they're going to get up for this rivalry. And if you're Ohio State, that is as bad of a loss as you're going to have. Just terrible. Ryan Day, and in the fight after the game, not a good look for Ohio State. They're still going to make the playoff, but how are they going to respond after that? They had the 3 goals beginning of the year, and they said one of them was to beat Michigan, and then they lose to the worst Michigan team in some time at home, who don't have a passing game. Ugh, that's as bad as a loss as you're going to find. 13-10, Michigan takes down Ohio State. Alabama in the Iron Bowl, 28-14 over Auburn. Notre Dame, 49-35 over USC. They have no more games to play. They're not in a conference. They will be in the college football playoff for sure. But with the Ohio State loss, pretty much secures Penn State and Oregon being in the playoff. They play in the Big Ten Championship next Saturday. South Carolina takes down Clemson 17-14. Everyone thought Clemson's year was done. Not so fast. Miami of Florida, the Hurricanes, just need to win at Syracuse to be in the ACC championship game against SMU in the most Miami Hurricanes way possible, they lose 42-38. Everyone's going to talk about the kicking the field goal at the end of the game, not going for the touchdown with Cam Ward, only cut the lead from 7-4. Listen, Syracuse were the better football team. I don't think it would have mattered. Even if they tied the game, I still think Kyle McCord goes down the field for Syracuse. But that was just an awful, awful loss for Miami. Now they might not make the playoff now. They're a ranked 6 in the country. Your losses are to Georgia Tech and Syracuse. And you have a bunch of 3-loss SEC teams waiting there. That could be their season. That really could be their season. And Clemson, as a result, will play SMU in the ACC championship game. That environment at Kyle Field Saturday night was unbelievable for Texas and Texas A&M. The first time they've played in 13 years, they're back in the SEC. This rivalry will happen Thanksgiving weekend every year now, and it's great. The winner of this game would take on Georgia, who won that unbelievable game against Georgia Tech on Friday. And it's the Longhorns behind a dominant performance on defense, 17-7. The only touchdown was a pick six by the Aggies defense. They're, man, credit to the Longhorns. They played their tails off defensively. They will face Georgia next Saturday for the SEC championship. The Big 12, we finally have clarity. It will be Arizona State and it will be Iowa State next Saturday in Arlington, Texas for the Big 12 championship. Cannot wait for that one. The winner of that will get into the playoff, the loser out. And if you look next weekend, our conference championship games, it's Tulane and Army, UNLV Boise State for the Mountain West, Georgia and Texas for the SEC, Iowa State, Arizona State for the Big 12, Penn State, Oregon for the Big 10, and Clemson and SMU for the ACC. Man, what a slate of games we have. And looking at that, we're probably Oregon's in, Penn State's in, Notre Dame's in, Texas is in, Georgia's in, all those teams are pretty much in. The real question is, Tennessee's in. Are you going to take the loser of the ACC championship game if it's SMU? And are you going to put Bama in, Ole Miss in, South Carolina in, over a team like Miami? Those are going to be the discussions, and I can't wait. The rankings come out Tuesday, then the conference championship games, then next Sunday we will find out who will be the 12 teams in the college football playoff. Quickly looking at the NHL standings, man, Florida, 33 wins in a row. They're on 31 points in the Atlantic, followed by Toronto, then Boston, who got that win in a centennial game over Montreal yesterday, 6-3. Not really going too well for Montreal at the minute. They've lost 2 in a row. We'll get into the Canadiens later on in the program. The Capitals, with or without Ovechkin, doesn't matter. They have won 4 in a row. Dylan Strome has been awesome. The Capitals lead the Metropolitan Division on 35 points. New Jersey on 34 points. The Hurricanes, 33 points. The Rangers sitting in fourth with 27 points. You head over to the Central. The Winnipeg Jets have come back down to earth. They've lost 3 in a row and now are tied for first with the Minnesota Wild, who have won 3 in a row. Dallas sits third in the Central. Jim Montgomery joining the St. Louis Blues has bumped them up a bit. They've won 2 of their last 3. They sit only a few points out of the last wild card spot. Head to the Pacific. It is the Vegas Golden Knights leading the way on 33 points, followed by the red-hot LA Kings, who have won 3 in a row on 31 points. The Canucks, 29 points. Jake DeBrus, big hat trick yesterday for him. They sit on 29 points. The Oilers have won 3 in a row as well. They are chugging in the Pacific. Quickly to the National Basketball Association, the Cleveland Cavaliers have a game-and-a-half lead over the Boston Celtics with a big win this weekend, followed by the Orlando Magic, the Knicks, Milwaukee, Miami, Atlanta, Indiana are the top 8. You head to the Western Conference. The Oklahoma City Thunder lead the way, followed by the Houston Rockets. What a job Ime Udoka has done with that team. They are 15-6, second in the Western Conference. Guess who's on fire? The Memphis Grizzlies. They have won 6 in a row. They are 14-7 right now. We'll quickly head over to Formula One, Max Verstappen winning in Qatar this weekend. He had some words for George Russell based on that qualifying incident. Man, the season's coming to an end, but still, no love lost between those drivers. It's crazy. Quick news in college football, USC's Miller Moss entering the transfer portal. He's going to be highly sought after quarterback. And Mack Brown, coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, he is out as head coach as well. We got a busy, busy show coming up. We have to talk about what the hell happened to Ohio State this weekend, as well as what to think of the Chicago Bears, and are the Baltimore Ravens really a Super Bowl contender? We'll have this all on the Tommy John Show over the next hour. I am Tommy Lane. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Discover a festival where documentary films and celebrations come together. Bold screenings followed by electrifying nights. Come and experience RIDM. It's happening in Montreal from November 20th to December 1st. Check out the complete program at RIDM.ca. The Montreal International Documentary Festival, RIDM, where all stories meet.
If you like served with a side of a little bit of and a heaping helping of then you're gonna love BVST, your best and worst of rock and roll, country, punk and metal, every Wednesday from 7 to 9 right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. So we just had the craziest weekend ever in college football. Just when you think teams are in, and just when you think the bracket is finally clearing up, you get results like this weekend. You get Miami losing to Syracuse. And yes, they had a good year this year. They won 9 games. Kyle McCord came from Ohio State, played great besides that Pitt game. But they lose, and now they're not even in the championship game. They were the shoo-in to win the ACC by everyone. They're not even in the ACC championship game, and now it's left out of their hands. Now the committee is going to decide, hey, is Miami worth taking over a 9-3 Alabama or South Carolina, who may be the hottest team in the country? There's going to be some conversations. Well, now Clemson, who lost to South Carolina, if they beat SMU, they're in. They won the ACC. They are going to be in the college football playoff. That's how big that Syracuse loss was for the Hurricanes. And that wasn't even the... That probably was the loss that affected a team the most based on getting into the playoff, because Ohio State is still going to get in. But that Ohio State loss on Saturday, it was maybe the worst loss a premier college program has ever suffered. Tommy, they're still going to make the playoff. Okay. But before this season, Fox, Jenny Taffer, Joel Klatt, one of those guys at Fox, asked Ryan Day, what are the goals for the season? The goals was to win a national championship, win the Big Ten, beat Michigan. Because if you don't know, Michigan had Jim Harbaugh, had J.J. McCarthy, had Blake Corum, had all these elite guys, and they would beat Ohio State. Last 3 years, they beat them. And then they complained last year about Connor Stallions, the guy who stole all the signals. They get Harbaugh suspended for the big game, and Sherrone Moore, now the head coach, because Harbaugh's coaching the Chargers, coaches the Wolverines to a victory. So it was 3 years in a row Ryan Day has lost to their arch rival. Arch rival. Also, some useful information here, too, is Urban Meyer, when he was at Ohio State, would just beat the hell out of Michigan. And then as soon as Urban Meyer leaves, there's the 1 year with his teams where they beat Michigan. And then every year since with Ryan Day, they've lost. But this year, there was no excuse. You have the number two ranked team in the country. In this NIL era, they bought one of the great teams you could ever ask for. Money is changing this sport like crazy. And Ohio State, who have the money, build a super team. Number two in the country, only loss, a hard-fought loss to the number one team in the country on the road in Oregon, a one-point loss. So they're clearly the number two team in the country going into this game. And all week, I had to hear from Ohio State fans, from everyone. I'm not even a Michigan guy. I'm a Notre Dame guy. I don't like Michigan at all. But Ohio State fans online, wherever they look, they're like, this game is punishment for the last 3 years. This is built-up anger that we are going to take out on Michigan. That's what they were telling us. This is 3 years in the making, and we are going to dismantle you. And they had that performance. And they put that on the field. Now, you can argue that, hey, this is Michigan's Super Bowl, which it was. They had nothing to play for this whole year. Their season was done in week five. And they circled this date and said, you know what? Our Super Bowl, our season is based on winning that game in Columbus. And you're probably right. But this is not an ordinary college football team. Michigan cannot throw a forward pass. They just can't. Those two interceptions were two of the worst picks I've ever seen. That second one in the end zone, when Michigan in the fourth quarter, what is Warren doing? And it's a great story. He battled through cancer. It's a great story. But he's not a good quarterback. He can't throw. The tie down, the schemed play, he's open by 10 yards, the tight end. Just got to put some air on it. He scores with ease. Throws the worst pick I've ever seen. That's who Michigan had at quarterback. Everyone and their mother knows that all they're going to do is run the football every play, basically. Michigan had 62 passing yards. 62. And won the game. And credit to Michigan, they played their tails off, and they wanted it more than Ohio State. But most of this is not all on the players. The Ohio State defense was very, very, very good Saturday. But this falls under Ryan Day and Chip Kelly, the offensive coordinator. The reason I say this is because Ryan Day clearly listens to the media. Remember a few years ago when they were at Notre Dame, Lou Holtz said Ohio State's a soft team, Notre Dame's going to win. And then at the goal line, Ohio State holds Notre Dame out to win the game. And then after the game, the post-game interview, when Ryan Day's on the field, he starts snapping a 90-something-year-old Lou Holtz. You remember that? He's like, how dare we call our players soft? I love these kids doing all that stuff. So clearly Ryan Day knows what's going on. He's not oblivious. All he's had to hear for the last 3 years is how Michigan is tougher than you. Your team's soft. It wilted. They ran the ball down your throat. And they man-footballed you. That's essentially what Ryan Day has heard for the last 3 years. And he wanted to fight against that narrative Saturday. So what did he want to do? He wanted to run the ball down Michigan's throat. Just as a way to shut up the critics. And you know what? When we played Michigan that year, we ran the ball down your throat. And we were tougher than them. Except, hello, the only what, three good players Michigan still has from the Harbaugh era are on that front. They have NFL guys on that defensive line. First round NFL guys on the defensive line. What Ohio State's advantage was in this game was that they have one of the elite receiving corps in the country. Jeremiah Love? He's the freshman for Ohio State. He's unbelievable. Jeremiah Smith, I believe his name is. The other one's on Notre Dame. Jeremiah Smith, freshman, unbelievable. And Uboka, they have crazy good receivers on the outside. And Michigan, all their DBs, they are depleted on the back end. Depleted. Their first round NFL corner, Johnson, he wasn't there. So what was the advantage for Ohio State? Let's throw the ball all over the yard because Michigan cannot compete with our skill, and let's just run up the score. That should have been the game plan. Finesse, throw it over the top. But Ryan Day just wanted to prove the doubters wrong. He wanted to say, you know what? I am going to take out all this anger we've had, and we're going to run it and punish them and bully them. Except that is the exact game Michigan wants to play. Their only good players are on the defensive line. They have NFL guys in the interior. That's it. Linebackers, no. Secondary with Johnson out, no. They have no one. No one. And Ryan Day and Chip Kelly want to fight back against that notion so badly, that they threw the smart game plan out the window, tried to win that way, and man, did it backfire. I mean, it's embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. There was no Will Johnson on the outside. Throw the ball. And I'm not a Will Howard guy. I think he's incredibly overrated. He lost his job at Kansas State. And they think this guy's going to have all the answers for Ohio State, letting McCord go, and he's lighting it up at Syracuse. But all I am saying is Ryan Day is not the guy for Ohio State. He just isn't. He is not. Everyone's going to look at his winning. Oh, look at his record. Look, he's 46-1 against other teams not named Michigan. And, what's that? Oh, when they not play Michigan. Ohio State on their talent alone, me coaching them, will beat every other team in the Big Ten apart from Oregon, Michigan. That's it. I want to hear about Penn State. They're a choker program, too. We're going to get into Penn State. That's it. And Oregon wasn't even there till this year. So essentially, you had to beat Michigan. Your whole season is based on beating Michigan. And they hate each other. And Urban Meyer made it a point to all of his players at Ohio State when he was there that you hate Michigan and you want to beat the living hell out of Michigan. Now, I don't know what happened under Ryan Day. He worked under Urban Meyer. So I don't know what the hell happened. But he is so over his head in that. It's like he overthinks everything. Everything's so personal. Sometimes, Ryan, sometimes, it's about winning the game. That's all that matters. Winning the game. Who cares how you win? No one 50 years from now is going to remember, oh, we pulled the guard and we ran all over them. We bullied them. No, they're going to say, oh, we beat Michigan in 2024. That's all they were going to remember. But he heard the media, and he heard everyone calling them soft the last few years when they played Michigan. And he had maybe the biggest gap ever in talent in this rivalry's history and lost. And they were at home. This is maybe the worst loss in Ohio State history. On embarrassment. I know they're going to go to the playoff. They're still going to have a chance to play for a national title. But Michigan, in their worst time, in their lowest point in the last 20 years, still beat you. That is so embarrassing. And everyone says Sherrone Moore is a bad head coach. Oh, he's only there because Harbaugh picked him. He doesn't deserve to be a head coach. He's now 2-0 against Ryan Day in Ohio State. He coached last year as the interim. It's so embarrassing. It's pathetic. Oh, it was so bad. And Ryan Day, if this was the 14 playoff, they'd be out, and Ryan Day should be fired by now. Because all Ohio State cares about is beating Michigan and winning the Big Ten and playing for a national title. With that loss, they cannot win the Big Ten, and you lost to Michigan. But are you going to tell me now that this Ohio State team that they put on the field Saturday is going to win a national title? I highly doubt that. Highly doubt that. It was really, really bad. And watching that game, I was slightly rooting. I never root for Michigan. But they were so cocky this whole week leading up. The hardest day of my life was when we lost to Michigan. We're not going to let that happen. We're going to be... Everyone, all these Ohio personalities, we are going to beat up on Michigan. Michigan should just forfeit because then it only goes down as a 1-0 loss. They won't get their doors kicked in. Really? And then you put that performance out there? Everything was wrong. The game plan, the players weren't ready to play, and the only time they showed fight was after the game when they planted the M in the middle of the field. Then they showed fight, and what's Ryan Day doing? He's just standing there looking around. He looked like Matt Eberflus at the end of the Bears game. That's what Ryan Day looked like. Just pathetic. Loser football. Loser football. And Ryan Day, if they do not win the national championship, is gone. I don't want to hear. His only chance of saving his job is they win the Natty. And now they'll probably have a tougher game at home. Maybe they'll be on the road. Who knows? We'll see what the rankings are tomorrow. Unbelievable. What a terrible performance. Speaking of terrible performances, what is going on with Baltimore right now? They are so hit or miss. So hit or miss. Before the year, they bring in Derrick Henry. Everyone loves the aggressiveness because last year in that AFC Championship game, for some reason, they went away from the run game. It was what got them there, their defense and their run game. Yes, Lamar won the MVP, but it wasn't just because of his throwing abilities. It's because he can run with the ball too, and he is electric when he runs with the ball. For some reason, against Kansas City last year, they get away from it. They lose the game. This year, they bring in Derrick Henry, who's off to an unbelievable start. Unbelievable start. But what's alarming about this Ravens team is that their defense is nowhere near what it was last year. This team was the worst pass team in the NFL until Sunday. I think Cincinnati maybe eclipsed them on Sunday. They're either 31 or 32. Doesn't matter. They are one of the worst, if not the worst, pass defense team in the NFL. And all I had to hear is, well, I know that's bad, but hey, they can stop the run. They couldn't do that yesterday. Saquon Barkley in that fourth quarter went for, what, 70 yards and a touchdown? They broke. And what did they do once again when it was a close game? Still plenty of time left. You got a lot of time on the clock. You're only down, what, 3 at one point. They abandon the run. Lamar throws the ball 36 times. Derrick Henry gets 19 rushes. 36 times. Lamar throwing the ball 36 times is not a recipe that results in wins for the Baltimore Ravens. They need to hand Derrick Henry that rock more. And it could be that they're saving him because he's older and they want him for the playoffs. But that schedule is tricky right now when they're 8-5. Pittsburgh's 9-3. Giants, they're going to win that next weekend. But then they got Pittsburgh, Houston, Cleveland. Everyone's going to laugh at Cleveland. Cleveland beat them a few weeks ago. Who says they can't beat him again? They will make the playoffs. They're at like 90% to make the playoffs. But I don't know what happened to that defense. It is not who they used to be. It's not. Last year was the best defense in the league. And if that McDonald guy, the new head coach of Seattle, made all that difference, fair enough. But I don't think so. Something changed and something's wrong. Because when I look at the AFC, it's Kansas City, it's Buffalo, it's Pittsburgh. And everyone on these talk shows are going to tell us Baltimore. I don't see it. Right now, they have no other elite talent on the outside. They got good tight ends, decent O-line. They got a great run game. But on the outside, they have Zay Flowers and who? Bateman? Like, they trade for Deontay Johnson. I don't know where the hell he's been. They have nothing on the outside. And people are going to freak out about that. Oh, it doesn't matter. You can run the ball and you have tight ends. Exactly. So don't throw the ball 36 times. That is not a recipe. If you don't have elite playmakers on the outside and your best playmaker is your quarterback and your running back and you got a good O-line, maybe run the ball more and don't abandon it so quickly. If it doesn't work, look, at early on that game, it didn't work for Philadelphia. They had three and outs like crazy to start the game. But what did they do? Credit to Kellen Moore. And I don't like to give Sirianni credit. He's just standing there. But fair enough. I'll give credit to the coaching staff. They kept on running the ball, and eventually they got their run game to work. Baltimore abandoned it so quickly, and I don't know when they're going to learn. I think the Ravens are a good team. They're not a great team. Do not listen to the media or anyone tries to tell you Baltimore's a Super Bowl contender. They are not. And their one wild card, their one thing that no one else had, was the kicker who can make everything from 60 in, 65 in, Justin Tucker. He's washed. He is not the same kicker. He can't make anything. He missed an extra point, missed from 47, missed from 53, and you're looking at, oh, the 47, 53. This guy's the best kicker of all time, maybe. Right there with Vinatieri. He made everything. He was hitting 62-yarders like there were 40-yarders. He can't hit anything right now. And it's crazy to think that they would cut Justin Tucker. Like, that doesn't even make sense. Doesn't even compute. But if he continues to kick like this, and once they get to the playoffs and they're in a close game and they need those points, that could be it. So who knows if they cut Justin Tucker? Who knows? But it's gotten that bad on special teams. So I do not want to hear from anyone who's tried to tell me after one more win, oh, they're a Super Bowl contender. No, they are not. I don't want to hear it. They lost to Cleveland, and then they had a good bounce back game against Denver. Like, oh, yeah, they're back. They're Super Bowl contender. The media is saying that. They barely beat the Bengals, lose to Pittsburgh, and then they have one good performance last week against the Chargers. Oh, my God. A Chargers team that should have won the game. They were dropping passes like it was going. It was unbelievable how many drop passes the Chargers had. Quinn Johnson had two major drops. There was a missed pass interference call at the end of the game. The Chargers could have won that football game very easily. But the Ravens are a Super Bowl contender. Just because Lamar's good. Very good. But look at the Ravens right now. Their defense is nowhere near elite anymore. Nowhere near elite. Their pass defense is awful. Their run defense was number one in the league. That got torched. And then on offense, it's great, but if it's not Derrick Henry or Lamar Jackson, like, what else? If they get in the close games, for some reason, they abandon the run, which is inexcusable. Unacceptable. Well, it was a close game. It wasn't really working, so we switched to the pass game. What? Philly stuck to the run game even early on. Yes, how many passes did Hurts complete yesterday? Wasn't that many? 11. Hurts completed 11 passes yesterday. 11, and they were fine. I know why. They know their identity. We have maybe the best running back in the league, a great offensive line, and a defense playing out of its mind right now. Baltimore, for some reason, have an identity too, but they don't want to use it. They have arguably one of the great running backs of all time, and Lamar Jackson, who's one of the, probably he is the best running quarterback of all time. And for some reason, when the game's in the balance, they don't stick to it when they play a good team. They try and be fancy with their concepts, and it just goes, away. It's terrible. I do not want to hear the Ravens' name in the Super Bowl conversation. I will not have them on the Chiefs level, the Bills level, the Steelers. They never beat the Steelers. To me, they're the fourth best. They're right there with the Chargers and Houston. In the AFC, they are not. Right now, to me, it's either Buffalo, Kansas City, Pittsburgh who make it out of the AFC. I do not want to hear Baltimore's name. Maybe a few weeks they'll change my mind, but as we sit here now on December the 2nd, I do not want to hear Baltimore and Super Bowl. They are not built to win a Super Bowl. They aren't. And a lot of times they have costly penalties and dumb errors. The kicker can't hit anything. They're not a great football team now. They're an above average football team with a very good quarterback, great running back. But let's be honest, when they play these big boys, they don't win. They don't beat Kansas City. They don't beat the Steelers. I just don't know what to think of Baltimore. They'll put in a great performance next weekend against the Giants. Everyone's going to be like, oh, the Eagles are back. The Ravens are back. The Ravens are back. No. I am not buying the Ravens at all this year. I never have. I'm not saying I won't ever. But right now, to say they are a Super Bowl contender and one of the three best teams in the AFC, no. No, they are not. And on First Take, they're going to try and tell you that. On all these shows, they're going to try and tell you that. They are not. The Ravens are not one of those teams. They aren't. They aren't Buffalo. I know they beat Buffalo, but this is a new, different Bills team. They're not Kansas City. They're not Pittsburgh. Do they have some of the talent? Yes. But right now, their kicker can't hit anything. Their defense can't. It wilts at the end of games. I don't know. I'm personally right now, what I'm watching is not a Super Bowl contender. It's not. Sorry. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up that crazy week in the NFL and also talk about what's going on with the Montreal Canadiens as they lose yet another game over the weekend. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Blue. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Push that button.
How about this one?
Say something quick. The security guard coming.
What?
Say something quick.
Say what?
The Caribbean Callaloo, the 2-times award-winning show on CJLO. 1690 on your AM dial every Saturday from 2 p.m. till 4 p.m. 514-848-7471.
Who's that girl, boy?
You can't talk, but you can see her.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. Yeah, man, what a week in college and the NFL. Another big storyline we have to talk about is the Falcons and what the hell Kirk Cousins was doing. Oh, my God. 4 picks, and that picks, the pick in the end zone in the fourth quarter, and that pick 6, Oh, my God. Those were two of the worst interceptions I've ever seen. And I'm a Kirk Cousins guy. I've been a Kirk Cousins defender. But I don't know what the hell has happened to him over the last 3 weeks. But he's forgotten how to play football. He's just forgotten half. He's forgotten to. He doesn't know how to play anymore. The defense played better. They did not allow an offensive touchdown. And as a Falcons fan, that's crazy to say. Because their defense has let them down in the past. And today, yesterday was Kirk Cousins. Just vomiting everywhere. It was alarming. It was really bad. And in Young Wei-Koo, he was one of the best kickers in the league. What's with these great kickers missing things this year? Young Wei-Koo, Justin Tucker, guys who are usually just consistently awesome. And they're just missing like 30-yard kicks. In that Patriots game, too, Joey Sly, he almost hit from 68. Was like an inch short. And then he shanks one from 27. Like, what is going on with kickers? Crazy. That's alarming. The Bengals defense, alarming. That is very alarming. They can't stop anyone. Like, the Joe Burrow and the offense has zero margin for error. Zero. They don't score on a drive. Like, they're done. This rookie guy, Josh Newton, he was awful. There's a 3rd-and-9 play, and there's just a blitz. It's 3rd-and-9, and he just blitzes, and he's the corner. He's just standing there, and he lets Van Jefferson just run by him. For 43, it was like, you have to see the play. It was so bad. And then they somehow are still in the game. It's 44-38. There's a minute 50 left. It's 3rd-and-5, 3rd-and-4, and Justin Fields in the game. Everyone knows he's going to keep the ball and run to the outside, except Newton. He follows the running back. He's on the edge, and then Fields is just skipping to a first down. They are awful. The Bengals have a lot of problems, and poor Burrow, he's trapped there, man. He is trapped. Him and Chase are going to be trapped there. They need a Mike Vrabel. They need a guy like a hard-nosed coach who can coach up that defense. The offense is going to be fine. The offensive line's playing better too, but the Bengals, that's they're done. People are going to put them in the hunt. They're done. They're 4-8, and their defense cannot stop anyone. They can't even stop the JV team down the road. They are awful. Awful. The Vikings keep on winning close games. That's what they do. Sam Darnold needs some credit, man. That fourth quarter drive at the end of the game was superb from Sam Darnold. He just executes late. How many times is he going to do this? That Bears drive a few weeks ago in overtime, just so calm, led them right down the field. Same thing yesterday. They need a touchdown. They're down 6. No problem. Leads them down the field. He's going to get a lot of offers in the offseason. Maybe Minnesota keeps him. That's a strange situation with J.J. McCarthy. You draft a guy that high. You want him to play. But if Darnold's playing like this and they win 13, 14 games, it's going to be interesting. The Vikings, man, keep on winning games. Buffalo, that was a statement. Congrats to Josh Allen, engaged, and then puts on that performance. He was sensational. And for me, the really, really, the great thing about this Bills team is their balance now. It's not just the Josh Allen show like it was in years past. They got two very good running backs, kind of like they're not Detroit, they're not Montgomery and Gibbs, but it's like a similar. They got two different style of running backs that are really effective. They got Cook, who can kill you with speed, and then Ray Davis just wants to run into you. He's been awesome. And Kincaid, their all-world tight end, and their rookie sensation Coleman, they're both out. When they're back, they're going to have Amari Cooper, Coleman, Shakir, then they're going to have Dawson Knox and Kincaid, the two running backs, the O-line blocking well. But to me, Buffalo is so dangerous. So dangerous. 49ers, they're done, though. That was an inexcusable loss. That McCaffrey's out for the year. He looked great. That was the best he's looked all year in that first quarter. But the Niners are done. They're done. So that was a really good week in college football. Looking forward to that game tonight in the NFL. College football, however, as a Notre Dame guy, I feel as good as I can feel. I look around college football. No one scares me. Oregon barely beats Wisconsin. Yes, they're undefeated. I haven't been impressed with Penn State. Ohio State's losing to Michigan. Notre Dame is the hottest team going into the playoff. So I feel good. They're going to get in. They'll have a home playoff game. And if they are the 5 seed, they'll get the out large conference champion and the 4 seed to get to the Final Four. And I love it. I love it. Thank you for joining us on today's show, The Tommy John Show. Appreciate you guys. We're back next Monday, December the 9th. Can't wait till then. We'll speak to you guys next time.
Hi, this is Chaz from Tour.